when someone's thinking about doing a podcast, they want to get the gear list down just right, because for whatever reason, that's their, I'm so worried about I'll have the wrong mic, which is never the problem.
Never the problem.
0% of the time. I mean, you could have a really bad mic, but it's almost never that that's going to, you know, wreck your show.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of The Audience Podcast. I am your host, Matt. Today's special guest is none other than Chris Brogan. I've known Chris for quite some time. He's an author. He's a marketing person. He's a storyteller. And he's a veteran podcaster. And I thought, well, for one of the very first solo episodes that I have here, my new role as director of podcaster success, why not bring on Chris? Because I've been following his storytelling advice for quite some time and his journey through podcasting and marketing. He was doing internet TV streaming before that was even a thing. So I said, hey, he's a perfect guy to tell us, you know, what it's like to become a prolific podcaster. So that's exactly what it is. That's today's episode. Let's go ahead and dive right in.
So I'm a year later than the launch of podcasting. Podcasting was 04 with people like Adam Curry and Dave Weiner. And I showed up in 05 and I was like, well, this seems cool. And so I went to an event called the Podcast Academy, number 2 in Boston. And I sat and listened to a whole bunch of people tell me how I was stupid and all that. And then I said, well, I could make one of those. So I made a podcast. And what I thought in 05 when I launched the podcast was, I would launch a show called Fat Guy Gets Fit, because I figured I'll never run out of episodes. You know, you just eat a couple more Twinkies or something, and you're still in that episode. And it worked. And people liked it, and people responded. Before, this is back when you had to like write people a 3-page brochure how to subscribe to a podcast. And I've just had a show on and off ever since. So since 05. So it's 15 years under the belt.
Yeah. I think Owner's Mind is the one that that I recall, subscribing for like the very first time that I started listening to podcasts and like getting active in like that whole scene. It was Owner's Mind. But we were chatting before the show, and I've chatted with you about this before. I mean, I remember when I started my agency, when we first discovered each other, you were doing live stream TV. I mean, before anyone was even thinking live stream, like, what is this? you are doing this technology thing before Facebook Live and Instagram stories and all this stuff, ahead of the curve for sure.
It's like always a plus and a minus to be way early, because way early, everyone's like, I don't know what Brogan's doing. That looks stupid. You know, and I get to ride that out. And then a few years later, all of a sudden, quote unquote, everyone's doing it. And they're like, oh, look at Brogan on that bandwagon. I brought it. I brought this wagon. It's mine. It's from home, you know? And I think that you don't get any points for it, right? Like if you're there first, you don't get any fake internet points for it or anything. And so to me, all the tools have always been the same. My mom and dad were radio DJs in the 60s. That was one of their multiple jobs. And what was their job? My dad read the news. My mom played nighttime request line music, you know? And the things we can do with podcasts are so plentiful. There's so many cool internal corporate ways you could use them. There's so many cool external ways to just get out what you want to do to be an entertainer. I whatever medium I'm going to use, I just want to connect with people that don't feel like they have the same options for voices. Because I was a kid growing up in Maine with 3 channels, just like everybody else for a while. And the conversations I wanted to have weren't around me, because we just didn't have any access to talk about the things I thought were cool. And so ever since, I've just created stuff I thought was reasonably cool.
You know, it's funny. Somebody was interviewing me the other day, and I had never really thought, like, they asked, like, why did you get into podcasting and all this stuff? And I actually went back way back into my childhood. And you know, my family used to run a Chevy dealership just south of Boston. And it, like, dawned on me, like, I was in radio stations with my dad when he was like doing radio ads, and then they'd have him on like the local news for like local business talk. And I remember like, you know, flying like a paper airplane, like sitting in these radio stations. It's been around me like forever. And it never really dawned on me that, I don't know, like maybe it's just like in this DNA that I just love the medium of podcasting so much better. I mean, I have a face for radio. There's a lot of people tell me as well. So you know, there's also that. And blogging is just way too difficult, way too strenuous on my mind to sit and write as much. Has podcasting become your favorite sort of medium these days?
I mean, you got to remember, I'm a book author, and so I benefit from people saying, I love to read. But the U.S. Department of Labor and Statistics says that people read on average 19 minutes a day. And that includes texts, Facebook posts, things a president might say, and all kinds of things. And so that 19 minutes doesn't really bode well for my blogs or my books. And people are finding themselves with time. Like when you go grocery shopping, it's the perfect time to listen to a podcast instead of whatever music's pumping in. I mean, you might have that brief moment of, wow, I sure like the Men Without Hats. Safety Dance is a good song. You could do that, but like, or you could learn about, you know, how to breathe better, you know, and you could get an episode of like, I don't know, Tim Ferriss talking for 4 hours to someone you don't know and finding out why you want to know. And, you know, it's all out there. So I think, you know, is it my go-to medium? I'm still a writer first. So I don't write scripts for my shows, but I bullet out the things I want to make sure I cover. I have a rundown for every show. And I think that I'm a writer first, but I love either audio or video as a means to connect, because I just think it's, you get the warmth and everything else that's in a voice that you can't fake.
And this is coming from a guy who does a live stream show 5 days a week. Like you are back full circle doing that quote unquote internet TV. I remember thinking, like, remember we didn't ever even knew what it would be called. Like it wasn't streaming back then. It was just, we were like internet TV, right? Like that's what it is. But you don't turn that into a podcast, right? You have this 5 day a week live stream on Facebook. I tune in, but you don't turn it into a podcast yet. Maybe we can convince you, but why just the video component so far?
So the answer is yep, for sure. One reason is that I started this particular show at the very outset of the quarantine and the pandemic. And I wanted it to be video because people are feeling so isolated. And I thought if they could look at my handsome head, all this hair, whatever kind of facial hair I had going on, they'd be soothed. I have soothing facial hair.
Your superpower is your ability to grow hair. You can shave your head and in 2 weeks, you have this lion's mane. It's just amazing.
It's ridiculous. I can't lay any claim to why or how. It's just there. So that's why I do the show. The other thing is, at any time I could push a button and kind of split the audio file out of the video file, and I could throw up a podcast. And I think that there's time for that. But just so few people were commuting for so, there was like a long chunk of time where everyone got stuck working at home. And one thing is true is that if you have the propensity to watch something or listen to something, depending on context, you'll end up choosing the watching, which is why people can tell me like five or so things in their Netflix queue, but not what subs they've put in their podcast app. But one thing I can tell you is there's people got, they needed to get back to fitness in some way. So there's a lot more people out walking, bicycling, jogging, whatever. There's your listener. You cannot watch my video show while you ride your bike. I mean, you could, but it would be only good for about 81 seconds. And then, you know, the other benefit of audio, of course, is that you just get such a better theater of the mind kind of experience, and you can do more with it. So it doesn't, not every podcast is an interview show. There's incredible recreations and drama shows. There's all kinds of instructional type shows that aren't interview shows. And so I think there's just a lot more applications for Audible type listening based shows. I just happened to do a video one because I launched it during quarantine and because I'm just having fun with the visual opportunities that it affords me. So I could show a little bit of a clip on YouTube or something.
Yeah. I'll tell you one thing, this whole like live streaming, OBS, StreamYard, stuff like we're recording on today, Squadcast, these tools are great, right? Like you can put out these awesome looking shows. I mean, with far less dollars and far less technology than when you and I started doing internet TV many moons ago. But I have, this is going to be an odd twist, I have a deep appreciation now for video game streamers and like their ability to play a video game, interact with an audience and be entertaining and still be good at the video game at the same time. That is like, that's professional, like professional. That's a professional job. Like if they're somebody making money, like you are a professional. You can do many things at many times. Do you ever find yourself faltering over chatting and talking and communicating with these live streams?
Not me, because I have insane, like I'm super like I want to touch all the things. I'm very fidgety. And it's, you know, there's two different types of DJs. You know, those DJs that just push play and listen to one earphone for a long, long, long time till the drop. And then there's one that's touching all these knobs and something's actually happening. I'm the toucher. So I'll tell you, and you know, people can't, you and I are looking at each other, but for audio, I have Buddhist prayer beads that I am fidgeting the hell with right below the microphone so that I don't touch things. And that's something that from doing the show, I have a co-host on that show and she touches a lot of the buttons. We just kind of agreed on this. I was running the show plenty fine by myself and I could do all the things, but if two of us touch the same button at the same time, it negates, you know, it's like an in, out. So I have to learn to not. So it's weirder. The question isn't, you know, do you ever get wound up fidgeting? I love to touch all the buttons. Well, I have the opposite trouble of don't touch the buttons. And you know, podcasting is so great because if you don't have a guest or anything like that, you push record, you say your piece, you hit stop. And if you're nice, you edit a little bit. If you're me, you just publish it. And it's just, to me, the most magical thing that you could do that quickly.
Yeah.
And that's what I shoot for.
Let's just talk briefly on the advantage, both, yeah, I guess mentally and physically in the performance of it, of having a co-host. It's something that I've, you know, in my other podcasts struggled to find somebody that I, like, I've always said, I wish I had a co-host because it just takes away a lot of pressure. It allows you to bounce energy back and forth. Talk to us about the advantage that you see for having a co-host. Because like you said, you could do it yourself, but you have a co-host and you have had many co-hosts before.
So I watch a lot of, or listen to also a lot of professional comedians who have their podcast now. They all decided to get one because Mark Maron did so much with his WTF pod that everyone's like, oh, I should totally do that. And most are terrible. Most are, you know, these people are not hosts. They're comedians. That's a very different set of skills. But I like watching them sometimes. This is kind of a long lead up to say that in a lot of those shows, the co-host is just the idiot who actually knows how to use the buttons and knobs. And that's always depressing to me. Cause I, you know, one thing I fought my entire career is someone's like, well, who does the, you know, actually posting your stuff up on your blog? And I'm like, I do. And they're like, well, who does your video editing? I do. I do all the things. Like there's no staff of like, you know, small Malaysian children behind me. It's just me. Right. And, you know, people get weirded out like, oh, you've written every word that's got your name to it. Yeah. That's why I'm a book author. You know, it makes me super grumpy. So let me say that first. That as a backdrop, Carrie Gorgone was showing up. So she runs the Marketing Smarts podcast for marketing profs, 7.5+ years, several awards won. She then did Punch Out with Katie and Carrie, with Katie Robert, who works for another people that we know, Chris Penn and Trust Insights. She's the CEO. So she has that show. That won awards. My show hasn't won awards, by the way. Her other two shows have, but she's here so I can win. So she was showing up just to be supportive and she was in the comments all the time. And I would say something to you and you'd say something back and suddenly there'd be a link in the comments that I could flash to everybody else. And I was like, this is ridiculous. So I said, I don't have any money right now, but do you want to be like a co-host of the show and we'll just see what happens? She's like, yeah, cool. And what I really sold her on was come be part of the show. And then like the first day I made her co-host, she already is a host twice over. If you are thinking of a co-host, it cannot be your friend. It has to be your friend who is good with a microphone. It has to be your friend who understands that talking isn't hosting. And it has to be your friend that understands that if you don't operate with, like you said about touching all the buttons, my mind during the show is, am I asking the right question to make my guest look good? Am I asking the right questions to make the audience who's come to show up, the community that I have the opportunity to serve, am I answering their questions and making them realize why they're giving me this time? And am I portraying a narrative that I can continue between episodes so people remember why they keep coming back to my show? And that's what you have to be thinking when you're co-hosting, not, you know, do you talk good?
Yeah. Speaking of serving the audience, coincidentally, is the name of this podcast. And the most of the audience listening today, they're curious about, well, of course, how to grow their podcast audience, how to get connected and do all the things. But the number one question that we get at Kassos is, how do I why are my numbers not going up? Right? Why are my podcast listeners not going up? Right? And they might be doing a show twice a month. Maybe sometimes they do it just once a month, or maybe they're trying to do it every day, and it's just, you know, it's just not a great rhythm or a good cadence. But that is the question. I think I kind of know the answer to that, but I'm interested to get your take on, you know, why aren't my listeners going up?
Matt, with all your years, you know all the answers to that question. But I'll give you my spin on it just for your humor. So first off, you really have to kind of pick a cadence and stick with it. For an audio-only podcast, I'm a big fan of weekly. I've seen some people do daily successfully, but it's not so many. Entrepreneurs on Fire with John Lee Dumas. I mean, that's a well-oiled machine. He's got thousands of episodes. That's how he does it. The minute you say you're going to do something daily, says a guy who has a 5-episode-a-week show with 2 guests every episode. So I have to commit 10 people to say yes to the right calendar time every single week. Thank goodness Carrie helps me with that. That's stupid. So if you commit to at least weekly with an audio, that's good. If you go any less than weekly, you're in jeopardy. And I know that there's going to be people that are going to say nice things. You cast those people, will be like, no, whatever you want. The answer is weekly, or you're not going to have anybody come and pay attention. But you also have the Field of Dreams problem. If you build it, they don't come. Listen, let me brag for a second just to help you feel better about how bad you feel. I have 330-something thousand followers, 335 or something thousand followers on Twitter. I have a newsletter that goes out to 16,000 people every week. I'm reasonably well numbered on every other social network in the world. And people every week say, I've been doing this since March 2nd, you have a video show? Every week, I tweet about it so much so I figure people will unfollow me. And I'll tell you the one thing that changed. This is so embarrassingly dumb. I started posting graphics about the show. I would make a dumb graphic. I'd put my dumb logo. I'd put the guests' dumb names and a link to go find the dumb show. And people started showing up. Oh, I saw your picture on the Twitter, or it was on your Instagram. And they all showed up. So if you don't advertise, and if you don't advertise a lot, and if you don't promote your guests to hell and back, not you, but your guests, that's where you can run into some troubles. And I think that promoting is a super big important part. And I think another is just really trying to, anywhere you can find cross guest kind of opportunities, anytime you can, hey, we both do this thing about, let's think of a B2B example. You know, I do real estate selling tips. Oh, I do interior decorating tips. You know, let's do these things together, and let's mention each other, because it's not a finite audience, right? People subscribe to more than one podcast. Let's cross promote as much as we can. So there's a lot of opportunities for that. And that's my answers, at least off the cuff.
So I think it was Derek Halpern that might have said 90% promotion, 10% content creation, right? You spend this time creating the content, but you have to spend a ridiculous amount of time to promote it and get it out there. I could be giving him too much credit. It might not have been him that said it, but I do feel like that, right? I do feel like you can't just build it and they will come. You should have some kind of strategy. And, you know, like you and I, Chris, we get these emails all the time. Hey, can I guest post on your blog? Can I do this? Can I do that? There's something to be said to create good content for somebody else and then share it with them. So instead of just saying, hey, Chris, can I post on your blog? How about, hey, Chris, I've created this video about you, or I highlighted you in this podcast or this. Just here you go. Just take it. Have it. You know, I don't care if you do something. I just want to let you know I created it, right? And I think those types of efforts is just like another strategy to like work for your content. You have to work to make it, then you have to work to make it go out there.
You're absolutely right. And the content thing. So one thing I've been doing through pandemic is I've been looking at creative projects that friends' kids have made. So for instance, Jason Fall's daughter has an incredible podcast that she reads a lot of YA books, you know, young adult books, things like The Hunger Games and Harry Potter books and all that. That's YA books. And that, you know, if anyone knows anything about fiction, that's where all the kind of cool fiction is getting written these days, because that seems to be the most lucrative group of people who are actually buying books all the time. So when I look at videos of Katie Reed's, I get excited. So when you said about making something, I said to Jason, I said, can you ask your daughter, which is a weird sentence, can you ask your daughter, would she make me a little video for my show? And she did. And it was great because I introduced a whole bunch of new people to Katie. And I think that that kind of thing, cross stuff, is really one of the most powerful ways, because anyone who already loves Castos goes, oh, this Brogan guy seems nice. And then I sort of acquire a few Castos friends, right? So I think that that's always, you know, the preferred is, you know, bring the community that you've had the pleasure to serve somewhere else and share value wherever you can.
Do you have a phased approach where at some point, you know, because what people ask me all the time, especially in like this accelerator that I mentor in down here, they say, oh, okay, it's great. Like, I'm sold on content marketing. Like, I have to create content, whether it's a blog, an email, a podcast, a video. And they're like, which one do I start with? Like, well, you do all of them.
All of them.
You do all of them. And if you can't do all of them, then you do the ones that you can control and that you can get into that mindset. Do you think you have a phased approach to this live show where you'll then, okay, you've got the live stream going 5 days a week, guests are coming, then you launch a website, then you do the audio podcast, and then you make an Instagram account. Are you thinking that far ahead on these tactics? And if so, like, do you have these milestones you're looking for?
Yeah, well, so we threw an Instagram up. So I think it's called Backpack Show Live, because there, I think, was somebody camping on Backpack Show. So Backpack Show Live is already up on Instagram. We did a Substack newsletter. So not my big fat Infusionsoft, but I did Substack. And so backpackshow.substack.com. And the newsletter, I mean, it's slow so far. I mean, there's 100 plus subs. And for a guy who had, you know, or has an active list of 16,000. And, you know, I kind of gently poke people over there. Hey, go look at my other thing. You know, so I'm cheating. I'm trying to, you know, get some people over the fence. But I think out of, so whatever your primary piece of content is, the next thing after that has to be a newsletter. Because podcasts are a lean back technology, right? They're you're out bike riding, or you've got your baby in the stroller and you go to whatever. And you might go, oh man, what was that thing they were talking about? If you email people even the show notes, just the base show notes, you're giving them something that they can then, you know, respond to in a click friendly environment as opposed to the show. And so I always say newsletter next. And then there's some quote that always follows me around the web. And I see you like, some marketer always, you know, some marketer we've never heard of always posts it up again, and then everybody retweets it for a while. And it's no matter what, the first thing I would start with is a blog, Chris Brogan,
circa 2008.
Yeah,
that's what I would do. I don't think a blog is the thing anymore. It hurts my belly. I started journaling in 1998 when it was called journaling. I had a blog since 98. Most of them are lost to the annals of time. Because it was all different URLs, because who thought that would matter back then? And if I got hit in the head and had to start everything over, and chrisbrogan.com is stolen by Russian agents, and I had to start all over from nothing, I would definitely have a website. It would probably have a blog, just because that's where I grew up from. But if you put the gun to me and said, you've got to make money with this thing, it would be a newsletter and some entertainment platform. So a video and maybe audio stream. That would be it, period. Have a nice day. It
pains me too. I mean, as somebody who's a huge WordPress fan, like telling people about like owning the platform and open source, and you can do anything you want with it, and don't give your content to the, you know, to the social media platforms. Yeah, like obviously I'm biased because I'm here hosting the show with you, but creating a podcast or doing video would be the very first thing that I did. And then second, just like you said, send it to an email list.
The other thing I want to say too, and this is one of those, there's things that I see that are trending that I think are dumb and I don't think matter. And I think I always tell people, don't bother. It's not going to matter. You know, people say, oh, should you be on Snapchat? Nope. You know, should you get on the TikTok? Nope. Unless, you know, there's some really great reason why, but you know, for the most part, no. However, I've always been kind of lukewarm about Instagram. But one thing I've noticed, and as I talk to a lot more outside of marketing people, Instagram is most people's refuge now.
Yes.
And so I did a class for a whole bunch of people in Dubai. It was a New Media Academy, something or other. They all gave me and led with their Instagram accounts, not their Twitter. So they're at, in their mind, it's only at Instagram now, which again is one of those things I'm like, what are you doing? That's not how we keep, blah. But
I do a local podcast down here, south of Boston. And it's like all these business owners, that's that's the platform that they're on. The restaurants, the yoga studios, the accountants, everyone just uses and communicates through Instagram. And like you, like been in this world forever, and I never paid it attention. No. Just like, I'm not using that. Everyone uses it suddenly. It's crazy stuff. The next second biggest question on the list, how do I make money with my podcast? That's like the next thing. A lot of people see the Mark Marins, the Joe Rogans, you know, all of these people who are quote unquote getting these advertising dollars, and they say just kind of like YouTube. And maybe that's like where this is coming from. People are like, I don't want to do YouTube and try to get ad money there, but maybe this podcasting thing will work because I'm more comfortable with audio and not seeing myself. How do we temper that a little bit just for the beginners?
It's, you know, it's such a challenge. And it's funny, we now have two paid sponsors on our show after only just a few months. And both of them know it's a risk and a gamble. And both of them actually really know it's kind of goodwill. And they know that they're doing it just to be sweet and and I get a little bag of money with it. And it's little. Like, remember, so I'm Chris Brogan and I have a massive following, and I'm because my video show doesn't get a massive bunch of views, I'm only charging $500 a month. So I have two sponsors right now. And by the way, we have a kind of a cut day that says after this date, we'll revisit, because I would like to come back and say, look how many thousands of people are watching now. But if not, then I know what for sure is going to happen at the end of our times on both our sponsors. They're either going to go, well, we love you, thank you so much, that was fun, and that'll be the last I see of them. Or they'll be like, you know it didn't pay off, but I just like you, and so here's that money. But like, it's just not the easiest way to do it. Like, getting sponsor dollars. So first off, that wasn't ad revenue, because that's the worst possible way to make money. It's so hard to get the volume you need to do ad revenue. So take that one out of your head. Finding a sponsor means you got to call and be a salesperson. So I said to my sponsor, here's what the numbers are like, and here's why they're like that, because I think I'm still so early to this game that it'd be really dopey to ask you for a lot of money. So 500 sounds like a dumb number, but you're not going to hurt too bad if you even PayPal me $500. And they went, yeah, sure, Chris. And they did it. So we did the thinnest contract possible, the simplest contract possible, and just said, we're going to mention you in every episode. And frankly, like, I've already sold a handful of one of the platforms that I have as a sponsor. So like, cause I get the email that says, oh, another one sold. The other thing you can look at is affiliate marketing. If your show is that kind of show that it would make sense to have affiliates. So you can go to someplace like shareasale.com and look at, well, you know, I talk about computer technology all the time, and this place sells, you know, parts, like, so I could sell a cool 2 terabyte hard drive, right? You could do that kind of thing and say, I'm sponsored by, you know, Western Digital Hard Drives. Go to my URL/something that makes it sure that it goes to your affiliate link, and pick up one of these cool 2 terabyte hard drives. I can't believe they're only $105, right? You say your thing. You can say that and make that work. Affiliate's great. The third and kind of best way is if you actually have something for real to sell, and that the show isn't really the selling horse. The show is the thing that makes them so excited that they want to talk to you more. So I interviewed a guy who runs a NASCAR team, has NASCAR drivers that, you know, that's an advertising business. It's a marketing business, and the car is the advertisement, right? So he, in sort of figuring out who I was before he came on my show, said, I really love some of the stuff you sell on your site. Can you do that for me? So I have a proposal sent in to him. That's thousands and thousands of dollars, right? Because that's how much that costs compared to just a shout out on my show. So yeah, you could chase pennies by looking for something like an ad revenue product like AdSense, which is not the worst thing if you get volume, but it's horrendous when you start. You can hand sell sponsorships like I did, which is not the worst thing. But if you're really clever, I spend the same amount of time asking someone for $500 as I do for $26,000. And so I would kind of go with the third and have people go, man, I like your show, can I work with you? That's the ultimate show.
Yeah. You know, I think there's something in, you know, even though you said they sort of, these folks that are sponsoring your show now, and you said sort of in kind, they're like, hey, it's $500, not going to hurt you. I think there's something there. And if you're, you know, even if you're doing like a local podcast, maybe you're highlighting a local part of your community. And this is something that I'm going to do too. It's like, I could turn to anyone and just say, it's $25. What's $25? this is a podcast. This is new technology. This is where you get that salesman hat on, right? A little bit, salesperson hat on. And you go knock on the door and you say, hey, you know, look, $25. I'd only do two sponsors on the show. So you make $50 an episode, right? If you do four episodes a month, I mean, you're making a couple $100 a month right out of the gate for $25 an ad read. And
covers hosting.
It covers the hosting, by the way. Not an ad, but I'll make it an ad. Castos introductory plan is only $200 for the year. So you pay for your hosting in that 1 month.
What?
But it's very easy.
That's a great price. I'm not like, these guys don't pay me a dime. So $200 for the year?
Yeah, for our introductory plan, yeah. And then that salesmanship can come out, because then you can sell a bunch of them. And then when they come back and they say, hey, that was great. Is it $25 again? And you say, well, the guy down the street, he wants to pay 50 now because he heard it. And now you can kind of get into the salesmanship of advertising, the value of advertising. So I think that's a little bit of an aside there. Do you like ad reading? I like ad reading. I like reading ads for my sponsors. Do you enjoy it?
I like mangling the ad reading. Carrie did that today. We had a brand new sponsor start today, and they sent an enormous amount of text, and we said no, but God bless you. And so I said it one way, and then Carrie read it her way, and then I kind of made jokes on Carrie's. So you kind of have to work that relationship out too, though. I mean, if you're working on a show that's sort of supposed to, like if you're selling medical devices, then you can't be that way. You can't be goofy like me. So it has to match the tenor of the show. But I like ad stuff. And I like, because what you really hope with any kind of person who's going to take any kind of ad or sponsorship dollars or whatever, you have to hope that they actually like the product. You have to hope that they really represent the product. And I think that's really dramatically different for podcasters than it is for any other kind of entertainer. I always see the same thing. I will only take money from companies that I actually can vouch for their product. I actually like what they do. I can totally say what they do. Like the second sponsor we have, they sell a sort of website in a box for authors. That's, you know, it's not super magical to me, but it's cool. The thing is, the company who's making that website in a box for authors is a 20 plus year veteran of promoting really successful authors like Tom Clancy and those kinds of people. So they're like really good people. So when they say to us, you know, we want to give you a bag of money to say something nice about us, I can really recommend them. Like I have just spitting image proof. So I think that's the other thing is when you start going down this road, the minute the people that you have the pleasure to serve, you know, this show is called Audience. To me, the difference between audience and community is which way you face the chairs. Mm. And when I care enough about the people who show up to participate that I vet things for them, it's like what Oprah Winfrey has always done, then it matters. You know what I mean? If I just say yes to any ad, then you're going to go, oh, that cheap tramp, he says yes to anybody.
One last tactical piece of advice, call to actions. It's sort of along the same vein as, you know, ad reading. But this is a big thing. Like if you're not selling sponsorship spots, if you're not doing like a promotion for an advertiser or something like that, but it is to your service, maybe you're uncomfortable with just like doing an ad spot for yourself. Do you have a tactic for like doing call to actions, top of the show, middle of the show, end of the show, as many times as you possibly can? That's something that I've seen a lot of people just kind of struggle with because they just don't like to sell themselves or promote themselves. Do you have a particular methodology for that that you
That's a grand question. You know, there's so many ways in. And so I'm a fairly introverted person, and people don't ever believe that when they hear about me, but I'm like, I do not get my energy from being in a crowd per se. I get my energy in being really helpful. And then I go to my room and, you know, rock on my bed for a long time. But, I can tell you that when it comes to sort of sliding yourself in and slotting yourself in, you got to believe that you're there to help them too. Right. So you got to say, you know, well, this isn't exactly like an ad for me, but I do this sort of service that I think you'd find really useful. And I just want to make sure you know how to reach me in case you need it. And that's, you know, it's such a different experience, right? Nobody ever likes to be sold to. Everyone likes to buy. When someone's thinking about doing a podcast, they want to get the gear list down just right. Cause for whatever reason, that's their, I'm so worried about I'll have the wrong mic, which is never the problem.
Never the problem.
0% of the time. I mean, you could have a really bad mic, but it's almost never that that's going to, you know, wreck your show. If you were to say, look, if you gave me 8 minutes of your time, we could go grocery shopping together, fill the cart with the crap you need for your dumb podcast, 8 minutes of your time, I would save you hours of research. Is that worth $20? Yeah. Eight minutes versus $20. Of course you're going to be like, yeah, because I don't have to go do all the stuff you did. So if you, even if you sold the nifty cool podcasting gear guide for $20 and then you basically promote the site, the stuff that you like to promote, it helps the other person. Sales yep. is service. And so that's how I get around that feeling of, oh, I don't want to talk about me. You know, that's how I do it.
Chris Brogan doesn't want to talk about himself, but we're going to talk about you. Chris, where can folks find you to say thanks for this amazing content today?
I know I feel good about it. No. We'll go to chris@chrisbrogan.com for an email address, or just chrisbrogan.com and get my newsletter because it's the best thing I do every Sunday. See, that was me promoting.
Backpack Show live every day on Facebook.
Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and one of these years, LinkedIn.
Not Twitch.
No, I don't stream to Twitch. I'm afraid I don't have one of those cool green screen backgrounds, so I don't think they're going to like me.
Everybody else is castos.com. Castos.com/subscribe. Join the mailing list there. Get the download for your podcast starter kit. See you in the next episode. Hey, everybody. If you enjoyed today's episode, you want to leave a little feedback, leave us a 5-star review in iTunes. That always helps. If you're a Castos customer, you have questions and you're trying to get that podcast off the ground, just shoot me an email, matt@castos.com. I am your director of podcaster success and happy to help give you some advice. If you're challenged, struggling a little bit, happy to help. Also, putting out a lot of helpful stuff over on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/castos, youtube.com/castos, and definitely hit the subscribe button, ring that notification bell, because I'll be uploading a lot of videos there. I already have a few for our new private podcasting feature. All right, hope you enjoyed today's episode. Don't forget to email me, matt@castos.com. See you in the next episode.